So what's going to happen? I don't know, but it is a crisis. And it is a crisis that does not get fixed by saying, let's not think about it, let's just build a lot of houses. And that's what really the solution is so far at the state level.
That's Gary Patton, a local attorney and adjunct professor at UC Santa Cruz. He moved to Santa Cruz in the 70s, right when an opening on the County Board of Supervisors became available.
I was asked to run by some people who would watch me make these speeches about environmental protection, and I won. I was 29 years old. I had never held public office before, and I then served on the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors for 20 years.
And during that time, Santa Cruz County became one of the most expensive in the nation. In fact, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, Santa Cruz is the second most expensive jurisdiction in the United States, just behind San Francisco, its northern neighbor. In Santa Cruz, you'd need to work, on average, 4 full-time jobs at minimum wage to rent a 2-bedroom apartment. As you can imagine, that makes securing student housing at UC Santa Cruz or nearby one of the local community colleges an ongoing struggle.
What the university has done to try to deal with the housing problem is they have turned double dorm rooms into triple dorm rooms. They have taken little lounge areas that used to be retreats when your roommate is playing rock music and you can't stand it anymore. You could go out there and read your books and have your laptop and work out there. They've eliminated the lounges. They've crammed people together.
This year, the campus even reduced enrollment because they couldn't provide housing for those students. And it's not just UC Santa Cruz. Last year, UC Berkeley also enforced an enrollment freeze due to a lack of housing. So what are policymakers doing to address the student housing shortage? And what can UC Santa Cruz teach us about how to respond to the student housing crisis felt statewide?
Higher Ed Rewired is a production of the California State University, the largest, most diverse 4-year public university system in the country, and an engine of social and economic mobility. Each episode examines groundbreaking research and exciting innovations taking place across the nation that are transforming the pathways for student success.
Welcome to Higher Ed Rewired. I'm Michael Wiafe. I'm a San Diego State University and UC Berkeley alum and past president of the Cal State Student Association. According to the Census Bureau, California's population grew 3 times more than housing units over the past 10 years. This statewide housing shortage, coupled with increased enrollment at both the University of California and California State University systems, has pushed campus housing over capacity. This shortage affects not just students, but instructors and staff alike. Today, we'll look at Santa Cruz as a case study for the student housing crisis happening in California. First, I'll talk with a team of researchers and professors at UC Santa Cruz on the factors that are creating this deficit. Then, I'll speak with a local attorney about how existing state policy impacts these growing pains. Lastly, we'll hear from a current California senator about policy changes that can boost the number of affordable units for students. Together, we'll understand what universities and policymakers can do to find more holistic solutions.
One of the questions we asked in the survey is, anyone living in a place in your dwelling that's not made for sleeping? And the number of students that said, oh yeah, I sleep in a pool shed, I sleep in a garage, I sleep in a tent in the backyard.
Stephen McKay is a professor at UC Santa Cruz and a researcher at the No Place Like Home project. No Place Like Home started in 2016 as a community-initiated, student-engaged research project on the affordable housing crisis in Santa Cruz County. Residents' income can vary, but if a household spends 30% or less on their overall income on housing, then it's considered affordable.
You hear a lot about the housing crisis, but it's mainly about homeowners. And so this is where Miriam and I, we thought we would collaborate to do a large survey of renters and really find out, well, what is it like to be a renter in Santa Cruz County?
McKay worked on the survey with Miriam Greenberg. She's a professor at UC Santa Cruz and an expert in urban studies and housing.
In doing the research, we ended up connecting with academics and engaged scholars and activists and others working on this issue throughout our region, and thinking about the three P's, which is the need for the production of new affordable housing, the need for the preservation of existing affordable housing, and the need for the protection of tenants. And in our region, we found real problems in all of those areas. And I think certainly in terms of production of housing, there's a need for the University of California, Santa Cruz, as well as the UC system more broadly to produce more housing. Our campus happens to be one that houses more of its students per capita than other campuses. Nonetheless, we could do better. We could produce more.
The three P's. Production, preservation, and protection are crucial to reimagining the housing crisis as a way to preserve and create more affordable housing.
I actually am a planning commissioner for the city of Santa Cruz, and so I'm pretty aware of some of the zoning challenges around that, the financial challenges around producing new affordable housing right now. Similarly, preservation, we're losing so much already existing affordable housing to speculation, redevelopment, turning units into Airbnbs and so forth. And that's been a big issue for our tourist-oriented town. And then finally, we lack protections for renters who are the most hard hit by the crisis, both student renters and renters more generally in our region. There are basic protections, and now the state actually has implemented some protections in terms of, you know, rent gouging and rapidly increasing rents.
Because Santa Cruz's cost of living is so high, McKay's and Greenberg's research led them to redefine and expand the terminology to describe renters' experiences.
Renters are rent burden, meaning they have to spend more than 30% of their income on rent. Half of the people we talked to were extremely rent burden, meaning they spent half of their money on rent. But we found that there were people spending over 70% of their income on rent. We had to invent the category. We call it obscenely rent burdened. And 25% of people we spoke with in Santa Cruz were obscenely rent burdened, spending 70% of all their income just on their housing.
Just thinking about that gave me chills. And I remember even when I was living in the Bay Area, most of my check for sure went to rent. Can you kind of zone in a little bit on the student housing issues? What are those challenges like at UC Santa Cruz now that you've kind of given us that context in the city?
Among those 1,700 that we surveyed, we found that students were even more, because they're paying their rent out of borrowed money, right? So they're even more severely rent burdened. So 44% of the students that we talked to were obscenely rent burdened. You know, because they're borrowing on their future, right, in order to be able to pay for their education now.
In the previous episode of Higher Ed Rewired, we talked about how universities address student homelessness by creating basic needs centers, where students can access food or temporary shelter. But permanent housing in particular is much harder to find, in large part because of politics.
Food, as well as healthcare, and, you know, we think of them as human rights, so we don't allow people to go without. Like, we have kind of a net. And the problem is, housing is never seen as a right and as a basic need in the same way that we think of food and healthcare, right? Like, we budget for those emergencies because we feel it's intolerable for people to go without food or healthcare, right? You're not going to get refused a ride on the ambulance. But you are going to be refused housing.
Housing should be seen as a basic need, and California legislation should reflect that. An obvious solution would be to immediately create more housing units. But due to a few state policies, it's not that simple. Remember Gary Patton? He spoke at the top of the episode. His place on the Board of Supervisors for Santa Cruz County coincided with the Monumental Act that had just been signed by Governor Ronald Reagan in 1970.
One of my first cases was to use CEQA to try to prevent the city and a savings and loan company from knocking down a historic building, and we lost that case, but CEQA became ever stronger.
CEQA, or the California Environmental Quality Act, requires that state and local agencies in California follow a protocol to analyze and publicly disclose environmental impacts of proposed projects and adopt measures to reduce those impacts. SQL was an important tool for people like Patton, who were trying to responsibly develop housing in their communities at that time. Nowadays, within the state legislature, CEQA is politically charged.
The university is exempt from all local control except for two cases. If it's in the coastal zone, the Coastal Commission will have jurisdiction. And if there is a possible environmental impact, CEQA does apply to the university. So CEQA is one of the only tools that a local government has to make the university stop and think, make the university have to address local impacts.
Pro-housing advocates believe environmental concerns can hold up a project for any number of related reasons. And according to the Legislative Analyst's Office, CEQA appeals delay projects by an average of 2.5 years. But environmentalists believe CEQA is crucial in protecting California's water, forests, and natural environment.
And if you want to know who really loves CEQA, it isn't a bunch of white guys who are NIMBYs. It is minority communities who, if you think about how development has always occurred historically, down in the Los Angeles area is particularly clear around the ports. Small communities, often people of color, often minorities, often lower income communities. That's where the refineries go. That's where the trucking places go. That's where the impacts are felt the most.
Today, CEQA is one of the many reasons why Santa Cruz can't meet its own student housing demands.
There's a judgment of a court that says you can't grow if you can't provide the housing. And so that's what the fight's about in the courts in Santa Cruz. Will we be able to maintain in our community that continuing commitment that you can let in more students, but you got to have the housing on campus to deal with them? And it applies to faculty and staff as well and what the community is trying to do. The market is producing housing for those who can afford it, and that's upper income people. Will the state ever say every time a developer, you know, builds 100 houses, they have to provide 15 of them or 20 of them at a price fixed thing that ordinary average and below average income people can do?
So Santa Cruz has Measure J, but the state doesn't operate that way.
Instead, it just says, hey, don't get in the way of these housing developers who, as they develop these upper income housing developments, actually are not helping the lower income people. They're making it harder for them.
Historically, since the state has not built enough affordable housing, people within the legislative system have tried to address it in their own way. So you know that song that goes, I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. Well, for the housing bill in California, it really is a long, long journey to the capital city. Take it from Senator Nancy Skinner.
Hi, I'm Nancy Skinner, state senator from the East Bay. That's Senate District 9, covering the cities of Oakland, Richmond, Berkeley, and a number of others along the I-80 corridor.
Skinner authored AB 1930, a bill giving college students access to federal food assistance, which has been copied by almost every state in the country. But even though a bill is popular, it doesn't mean it's easy to pass.
I, for example, carried a bill in 2020, SB 290, to streamline the creation of student housing. And that sounds like that should be easy, that everybody would be for student housing. But the process gets difficult because after you introduce your bill, the policy committees analyze your bill. But let's say you get it through both one or two policy committees, you get it through your appropriations committee, then your own house has to pass on your Senate floor. So let's say you're successful there. Then it has to go to the other house. It's like playing a board game. There's a whole lot of, you can hit snags or you might not be able to pass go. Luckily, my bill on streamlining student housing was successful and it made it easier for student housing to be built and faster.
SB 290 removes some obstacles for developers if at least 20% of their affordable housing projects are set aside for lower income students. This bill makes it easier for student housing to be developed, despite the fact that some campuses have run out of land to build on.
We had to change the rules in order to build that on land that wasn't campus land. So we get a lot of pushback often from the communities where colleges exist. Myself and my other colleagues in the legislature, we know that we need housing so bad that, you know, sometimes we just have to say, neighbors, you live in a college town, students have to live there too, and you have to be open-minded and let us build student housing.
Bills like SB 290 ease the housing crisis, but it's not keeping pace with enrollment.
I know there was a recent funding initiative of, I think, around $2 billion to support student housing on UCs, CSUs, and at the community colleges across the state, which is great, but it's really a drop in the bucket in terms of what's needed given the scale of the housing crisis and of our growing student population.
That's UC Santa Cruz professor Miriam Greenberg again. Because of politics, it seems like the right type of housing development is hard to achieve, even with the state mandate asking for an increase of housing. Here's Greenberg's colleague Steve McKay.
Santa Cruz likes to hold itself up as an example that they stop things that weren't going to be beneficial to the community from happening. And the trouble is that they haven't been so good at allowing good development. And by good development, we mean affordable housing, not just development generally. It's a tough because the mandates say they should be building, but they doesn't necessarily have to be affordable, right? So we understand from the perspective of locals in Santa Cruz that want to protect Santa Cruz. And that's in a place like Santa Cruz, you cannot leave it to the market because the housing market is so tight that developers are going to make the most money and only want to build luxury housing. And to us, that's not a solution either.
What we're seeing here is kind of the results of a market failure. Would you agree with that?
Yes, 100%. We think that really there needs to be a decommodification of housing on some level. If we really hope to have sufficient amounts of affordable housing, there needs to be much more room for what might be called social housing. And the University of California is one entity that can participate in that, being a public university to provide housing for its students, staff, and employees, and faculty. Faculty housing, where we live, is essentially a limited equity co-op where we were able to purchase homes below market on land that the university owns.
Greenberg mentioned social housing as one way to increase housing supply. But the closest thing to social housing in America is public housing, which people oftentimes associate with old, unmaintained, government-funded units. However, social housing in other countries is not only contemporary and well-maintained, but it also empowers residents by offering them affordable units that they can share if they want to.
So other large employers, both public and private, can play a role in this. Certainly the state of California can play a major role, and on a national scale, as well as community groups like through community land trusts and other kinds of efforts to decommodify housing at a more local scale, if they have access to the capital to do that.
I really like what you're raising here, which is that there's other ways to operate within the way that the market currently stands that gets people what they need, like what housing actually should be for people to live, rather than ways to make money, which is the way that most people are seeing it now.
Miriam and I and our students really want to try to, you know, provide the data that's often hard to get about what it's like to be a renter, to do the research about, well, what are those alternatives that we haven't even really talked about that could happen? And what are some kind of policy ways forward where the university could be useful, right? Again, as a partner in a community, this is our community too. And there is this often this town-gown divide. And we saw it where, you know, a lot of local folks blame students for the conditions. And one of the best things that came out of our project was that students were going around talking to other renters and saying, yeah, we're renters too. And so instead of local people against students, we made it much more a movement about renters generally. And it was one of the few times that locals and students were actually on the same side advocating for more affordable housing. And they saw each other as allies instead of as opponents.
Professor No Place Like Home's research shows that increasing engagement in the Santa Cruz community can reduce divisive thinking. After all, in order to tackle the housing crisis, the state, universities, and their local communities need to band together to create preventative measures, not temporary fixes. And universities can lead the charge by being more responsible for enrollment and housing students and staff.
We are the largest employer in Santa Cruz, and if we could provide more affordable housing for our employees more broadly, and that includes graduate students and graduate student families and others who may be here for quite a while with their kids, the renter side and the owning side, and this kind of unique role that universities can play in transcending the town-gown divide and in taking the lead in addressing some of these issues.
Higher Ed Rewired is produced by the California State University Office of the Chancellor as part of the CSU's Graduation Initiative 2025. To hear more stories like this, listen at higheredrewired.com or subscribe from wherever you get your podcasts.